Okay, let's get started. So we're doing Perek Dalid. Actually, last week we got started in the first couple of Pesukim, but we didn't get very far, and the attendees from last week are not here this week, and the attendees from this week were not here last week, so it worked out. So the truth is the Haftorah only starts from Pasuk Dalid. We'll start from Pasuk Aleph. It begins... Well, maybe give a little bit of background, right? Bnei Yisrael has conquered Eretz Yisrael, and of course we know they have a command to completely destroy all the nations that currently dwell in the land, all the Canaanite nations, and they, and in the beginning of Sophim, we see that they don't actually follow through with that, and that creates problems for them. And it's bad influence, and there's basically a cycle of, you know, they do Averos, and they're oppressed by the, whoever it might be, the Plishtim or the Canaanim, or, you know, it's different Prokim, it's different people, and then they do Tshuva, or they cry out, and then somebody tends to save them, etc. So here also the parak begins, Vayosifu b'nei Yisrael asos hara b'nei Hashem ve'ehud meis. And Bnei Yisrael continued to do bad in the eyes of Hashem, and Ehud died, or Ehud was dead. So, it's interesting that it talks about Ehud, because Ehud wasn't actually the last Shofet. There was a Shofet in between Ehud and this current period, and that was Shamgar. He's really mentioned in the last pasuk from the previous parak. Very end it says, and after him, after Ehud, was Shamgar ben Anat, and he hit the Plishtim, and he also saved the Jewish people. But here the Pasuk mentions that it was Ehud mate. So the Farshim tell us either number of different approaches, but either that you know, during Shamgar's day, Shamgar may have been the Navi, the Shofet, but things weren't perfect, and this is actually occurring still during Shamgar's lifetime, that we're saying that they continued to do bad. So it says Ehud Meis, you know, Ehud was gone, the leader was gone, and now they continue to do ra, to do bad, despite the fact that Shamgar was the Shofet. Or it could be that even Ehud was still alive during Shamgar's time, and he was just old, right? I think there was like 80 years of peace after Ehud became Shofet. Ehud was still alive, but Shamgar was the acting Shofet. He had the Malbim says it. As long as Ehud was alive, his chus was still a protection for them. But once he passed on, so then they lost that protection. Plus it continues, Vayimkarem Hashem b'yad Yavin melech Kanaan, and Hashem sold them into the hands of Yavin, the king of Kanaan, Asher Malach the Chatzor, who was the king in Chatzor, the Sarziva O Sisra, and the general of his army was Sisra, Vehu Yoshe Bacharoshes Hagoyim, and he dwelled in the city Charoshes Hagoyim. Charoshes Hagoyim was, the word Charoshes usually refers to like a trade or a skill. And so the Ralbag brings a couple of approaches to why it was called Charoshes Hagoyim. Either it was this grand city that many, many craftsmen contributed to, like a masterpiece, like a great fortified city. Or another approach that he offers is just that this city had all the every craftsman you can name, like all the shops, anything that was needed. This city had it was you know it was like Times Square. It had they had everything that you can imagine.
It's just interesting because you know people's last names, like their music symbolized like what they do.
Right.
But you don't really find
funny names. Right.
I like
on Friday there, there are all these Baghdadis. That's Friday.
Friday.
But the names of the cities are named after the crafts of the city.
No, I'm saying they're people's names.
Are city names.
Right. Last names get people's last names get either the crafts or their city.
Right, right.
But you're saying cities don't know.
Shapiro,
for example.
The city took on the name of like people or the work that was done.
So here you have Yavin, who's the king of Canaan, and Sisra is the famous general, and the pasuk continues, Vayisaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem, and b'nei Yisrael cried out to Hashem, ki tisham me'oz rechev barzelo, because he had 900 iron chariots. This was, you know, in those days, a tremendous, tremendous army.
We go back.
And it could be that there's a little bit backwards for you.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Déjà vu.
We're just catching
it.
Okay. Zehul Lachat says B'nai Yisrael B'chazka Esrim Shana. And he put pressure on B'nai Yisrael for 20 years. So this word Vayisaku, and they cried out, so the Malbim points out that in the earlier Prakim, we find a similar word, but it's slightly different. It's Vayizaku with a Zion a couple of times. And so what's the, why does it change? Why does the Prakim change to Vayizaku? So he says Vayizaku is a greater plea. It's a greater, it's a stronger cry for help. And he says that the Pasuk really tells us why, you know, why they were feeling the need to so strongly to cry out. The Pasuk says that there were three reasons. Because he had 900 chariots, and they had no, you know, there was no chance that they could defeat such an army by natural means. And because Behu Lachat, he was putting on this pressure, he was cursing them, and the other thing is that it was a very long shibud, a very long enslavement, they were under his rule for a long time, 20 years. So because of those three reasons, their need to cry out was even stronger than in previous situations of oppression. And now we're introduced to Devora in Pasuk Daled, who Devora Isha Nevia Isha Slapida. And Devora was a Isha Nevia. She was a prophetess. Isha Slapidos, the wife of Lapidos or a woman of Lapidos. We'll have to see what that means. He Shoftas Yisrael Ba'Eisahi, and she ruled. She judged. She was a shofet. She judged Bnei Yisrael at that time. So, what does it mean, Ases Lapidos? So, this is review, so I'll test you now. So, what does it mean, Ases Lapidos? So there's at least three approaches to why she's referred to as Ases Lapidos. The first one is that, based on a Medrash and a Gemara, that she was Ose Silos L'mikta. She would make wick for the Beis HaMikdash. Interesting medrash in Tana de Elio. So, what's that?
Why Beis HaMikdash?
Sorry, for the Mishkan. Thank you. So the medrash says that it was actually in the course of this deed that she merited to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. Medrash says that why did Devora deserve? How did she end up being the shofet of Israel? So Pinchas was still alive. Why did she take over? So the Medrash says Hakol v'fi ma'isa she'osa kach ruach hakodesh shora ola. Based on a person's deeds, the person's actions, that's how Ruach HaKodesh settles on a person. Depending on what you do, Hashem reacts towards you in a similar way. And it says that Ba'ala Shel Devora Am Ha'aretz Hayah. Her husband was an Am Ha'aretz. He didn't have merit. And this medrash is assuming, I believe, that her husband was, that Barak, who we'll talk about, was not her husband. We'll see later the Tanya of Elio seems to, you know, talks about Barak and as a, you know, someone who was holding. So Ba'ala Shel Devora Am Ha'aretz Hayah, the medrash says. He was an Am Ha'aretz. He didn't know anything. Come and we'll make wicks, and you'll bring them to the Beis HaMikdash in Shiva. So the Mishkan. So the Medrash calls it the Beis HaMikdash. So, in this way, your chelek, your portion, could be with the Anashim Tseirim, with the greatest people, and you'll earn your chelek in Olam Haba. And so he would make thick wicks, and this way the light of the menorah would be great, and that's why he was called Lapidos. Wasn't really his name, but he was called Lapidos because he would bring the wicks to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, and so she is Ashes Lapidos. She is the wife of Lapidos.
So here it's translated as a fiery woman.
Fiery woman. Okay, so right, that's another shot. We'll get to that in a minute.
According to this, she was married?
She was married. I think
but
according
he,
to...
He was on a low level or he was not?
So, right, so actually it's interesting. I said before that I thought that it was that Barak wasn't her husband, but now with the Medrash continues and it says, Shalosh Shemos Yeshel, he had three names, Barak, Balapidos, and Michael. Like her husband actually had the name Barak. So we'll have to try to reconcile this with the Medrash Lager, where it talks about Barak as someone who was the Shamei Shamidei Chachamim.
Why did she have to earn Olam Haba by making wigs? Why couldn't she do
it? No, it was for him. It was for him.
He was her, so...
He was an Am Ha'aretz, so he didn't have...
He was an Am Ha'aretz, so he couldn't do it any other way.
Right. Okay. So she found this way that he could have great merit. So... right. So Amar Lo. So Hashem says to him, Ata niskavanta v'akisa p'silos avot k'dei she'aron meruba. You decided. You went ahead and made thick wicks so that the R from the menorah could be great. Arbel sach v'Yisrael v'Yehuda. V'shnei masar shetei Yisrael. So I'm going to make you great in Klal Yisrael. So because of this great act that she did, that she wanted to increase the light of the menorah. To spread the R, the menorah represents Torah, spread the R of Torah, the light of Torah, spread the R of Hashem, then therefore she merited to get to this great position. So that's the first set. Also, the Gemara Megillah also says the same thing. That's why she was called Ashes Lapidos. Rashi brings it here. The second one is, like Mr. Sapper was saying, that she was zealous in her deeds, like a lapidate, like a lapid is really like a flame. She was a fiery woman. She was but not necessarily in like an anger sense or but in zealousness in her deeds, in her actions, and that's how she. So I think in that interpretation, Ashes Lapidos does not refer to her husband's name. It's just she was a woman of Lapidos, right? Like a fiery woman. And then the third stat is that, again, that it refers to her husband, Barak. This could, you know, you could really go with the first one at the same time, but she was called Ashes Lapidos, the wife of Lapidos, because Barak was called Lapidos, and the Mepharshim point out that really Lapidos and Barak are similar. Barak means lightning, Lapidos, a lapid, as we mentioned, is a flame. These two words are related. Both represent something, you know, fiery. So either he, you know, he had a nickname or he had both names. But in any event, it would refer to her husband, Barak.
I just had a question. I'm not sure, but grammatically, the second shot that you mentioned, that it's seen a fiery woman. So, and Asia is not my wife. Wouldn't it maybe say like Asia?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think Mr. Sapper is also. You know your grammar, right?
A little bit, actually not a lot.
I mean, definitely sounds like
Asia
Labrador, right?
Labrador means wife of Labrador.
Right.
It doesn't mean
right.
a fiery woman.
Right, exactly.
Isha Labrador might be.
Right.
Yeah,
Labrador.
No, I agree.
Right.
I agree. Absolutely. But that's still one interpretation offered. I think it's the Mitsuda Javed. I mean, he says it's similar to, it's like Asha Chaya. So they're also, it's the same grammar. So,
poetic.
Perhaps.
Life.
Right. Perhaps.
Right,
right, which really
means
wife
of
Kyle. Right. I mean, it's always translated as woman of valor.
Right.
Like, but
there are interpretations that are actually referring to, like,
right, something
wife.
Else, right. The wife of, not necessarily referring to the husband, but, you know, the wife of this. So very good.
Very good point.
He shoved Israel. So she judged Israel. So obviously, right, as you said, you know, this is a fascinating chapter. You have a woman leader of Kali Israel. It's very interesting. So the first question is a woman even allowed to be a shofet? Can a woman be a judge? Can a woman sit on a basin? So, I'm sure I think Rabbi Grossman actually has given a shir about that at this venue. Probably Parshas Pesach, I wouldn't be surprised, but on this topic. But Tosfos really asked this question in a number of places. Tosfos points out that, he assumes that she's puzzled to be a dayan, to be a judge, because we have the Gemara learns out of Drasha. We know a woman is puzzled to be a witness. She can't be a witness. And the Gemara learns out that Kol HaKasher, V'hayid Kasher Ladon, in order to be a judge, you need to be kosher as an aid, as a witness in the first place. So Tosfos assumes that she is puzzled. So how could Deborah have been a judge?
That gets her whole point, which I don't know whether we discussed. How are these shoftim appointed? Ooh, did Hashem appoint them?
Right, so that's going to be one
Hashem
approach.
So if Hashem appointed her, then...
So it doesn't say how she was appointed.
There's another question. You're assuming shofet means judge, that is a judicial officer. It doesn't. I mean, the ancient Semitic meaning of shofet was chieftain.
Uh-huh. What does it mean, he shoftas, Israel? Just that she chieftain?
In ancient times, if you were the head of the tribe, right, everything was decided by you. So, you decided matters of dispute. You also decided, all right,
okay,
now we're going to attack these
so then
guys.
The
now
so we're back
build
to the question. If she's so can she decide matters of dispute in Halacha?
The point I'm trying to make is, here in this context, she was much more of a civic military leader than a judicial officer. I mean, there's no evidence here that she ever exercised any judicial function. She was saying, let's go to battle, let's do this. She was exercising
that aspect of the leadership.
Yeah, so we have to read the next pasuk. The next, unless you're going to be able to interpret this one, the next pasuk says, "V'hi yosheves tachas tomer Devorah." She sat under the tomer of Devorah, which we'll talk about. "Bing haramo, bing beis el, tarat raim." "V'yalu eleho b'nei Yisrael la'mishpat." And b'nei Yisrael went up to her for...
For what?
I mean, mishpat generally means
judgment.
But
for leadership.
It's also from the same root, like shofet.
I think in the Torah, shofet generally means a judge, but
that mishpat means judge
or mishpat.
right? The Jewish Publication Society translated Shoftim, Sefer Shoftim, as the Book of Chieftains.
Is that a good source?
It is, actually. They're very scholarly, right? And they're very... So, all I'm saying is, it has a connotation of being a judicial officer. It also has a connotation of being a leader.
Right. Definitely the assumption throughout Sefer Shoftim is that the Shoftim are also judging, but... Okay, it's possible. And Tosfos will, you know, sort of give an answer like that.
But in general, that is a mishpat.
Generally, we assume that mishpat and shofet has to do with judgment.
But you're right. If you're talking about, that the entire country is involved in war. If she's the leader at that time, her function principally is going
That's
to be
true.
A chieftain.
Absolutely, but I think the assumption is that Vayalela b'nei Yisrael ha-mishpat, when b'nei Yisrael is, you don't have every random guy coming up for,
What does mishpat mean in that sentence, would be your question.
Right.
It could mean the leadership.
Why is the random villager coming to her? What's he coming to her for?
Wouldn't be.
But it's B'nai Yisrael.
It would be the tribal leaders would be coming to her for leadership.
Okay, it's possible.
That's what it says right here.
This is what you get for don't read JPS stuff, then it won't.
Scholarly people.
So Tosfos gives a number of different answers.
I've had this discussion with somebody else who reads this stuff.
Okay. We're not going to talk about what we were talking about your reading last week. We're not going to discuss your reading from last week.
Well, you can
I don't want to discuss it. I'm just joking. So he gives a number of answers. So first of all, he says, and again, there's a number of different Tosfos, and in each place Tosfos gives different answers. So first of all, he says, similar to what you were saying, not exactly, but maybe she didn't do any judging, and she was just teaching dinim. She was a guide, she was a teacher, and that's what it means. Or he suggests that they accepted her because, right, she was a Nevi'ah, then they accepted her as a judge, and when it comes to at least mamonos, right, when it comes to monetary matters, as long as both sides agree to have someone as their judge, so then basically anyone can settle a dispute.
So it could be. Well,
like arbitration.
So that in normative circumstances, it's not. But
right, normally a woman can't be, but they accepted her. She was a...
Because I Sam appointed her, so...
I have a question. Why would we think that any of the Shoftim usurped the judicial function of the Levium? I mean, according to the Torah, it was the Levium to whom you go for judgment. Why would you go to a Shoftim for a judicial ruler? At all, ever.
It's not... The Pesukim describe... Okay, I mean, it depends on who you go with, but sometimes the Pesukim that mention the Levium, they also mention Shoftim. They say, you should come to El HaLeviv, El HaShofet, Asher Yehavim Lehim, or something like that.
Okay,
and
so for
some
a judicial
say the lady
ruling,
is
you go to a Levite.
No, but I'm saying not necessarily. The Pasuk says to a Levi or to a Shofet. Now, I think some Rishonim say the Levi who is the Shofet.
Yes.
But definitely it's saying that if there's no, Levi to be the Shofet, then someone else would be the Shofet. So another answer, and this is the most interesting one, would be that no, really, a woman is okay to judge. There's no problem with a woman being a judge, and the only reason, and the drasha that says kol kasher lahayid, kasher ladun, is only talking about a man. A man has to be kosher for edus, but that's only for a man. A woman, anyways, isn't kosher for edus, but she could still. he could still be a judge. That's one of Tosfos' answers. I don't think that we paskin that way, at least it's not practice, but that's another answer. And the last answer is what you were trying to say, which is that she was done up Yadibur. It was a harasha. It was a one-time thing, and she's got appointed, but in general she can't. But it was a one-time thing, and really, the Aruch Haner points out that meduyak that can be inferred in the pasuk itself, right? It says, "Vara Yishani Yah," right? She shofta Israel. She judged Israel, and that's sort of extra. She, why does that have to say, again, she judged, so he was trying to say she did, but generally, women don't do this. And also Ba'esahi, he says, is saying it was Ba'esahi, it was during that time, but it was a Rasha, it was very specific to that time, and couldn't be practiced at another time. He also says in the next pasuk, which we read already, but it says Vayalu Eleha B'nei Yisrael HaMishpat, and B'nei Yisrael went up to her for judgment. So he says that sounds like that we can infer like the other answer of Tosfos, that they had accepted her upon her. Tosfos answered, as long as you accept the judge, then that person can judge. And that's implied with the word Vayalu Eleha B'nei Yisrael HaMishpat, and they went up to her for judgment. They came to her, like they wanted her to judge. So, she was a Nevi'ah after all, she was a prophetess, so they wanted her to judge. They went to her, they accepted her, that is Meduyuk, that sounds like Tosfos' other answer, that they accepted her. So let's read Pasuk Hey. V'hi yosheves tachas tomer devora, and she sat under the tomer of devora. She sat or she lived, we'll have to see. And Tomer, traditionally translated as the date palm, famous, palm of Devora. She sat under that tree, apparently. Ben Haramo, Ben Yisrael. Tomer Devora, right? I mean, yeah, whatever that means. As in, that's what the pasuk says, Tomer Devora. We have to see what that might mean. Ben Haramo, Ben Beisel, Behar Ephraim. She sat, it was between Ramah and between Beisel on Har Ephraim, on the Mount of Ephraim. Yalu Eleha B'nei Yisrael HaMishpat, and B'nei Yisrael went up to her for judgment. So start with the Gemara. The Gemara assumes that she was, that's where she went for judging, and it was a palm tree. It was a tomer, and she would sit under this palm tree, and people would come and be judged. And the Gemara asks, Lama Tomer, I think Rashi brings it. The David brings it. Lama Tomer, why would she go under a date palm? And the Gemara says, Mishum Yichud. It was because of a problem of Yichud, and a palm tree has tall, the branches only start very high up. It was out in the open, everyone could see her. When men would come to be judged, that's where she would judge them because of the problem of Yichud. Some of the Mefarshim are bothered. What's the problem? Every judgment involves a towing and a nitton. Someone who is accusing or demanding, and the person who is being demanded from. So you always have two men there. So as long as you have two men and one woman, is no issur of Yichud. So what was her problem, they want to know. So yeah, what? A woman and
A husband and a wife.
So there's definitely no Yichud if there's a husband and a wife. As long as you have a husband and a wife there, there's no problem.
Well, for example, she's summoned Barak in the next pasuk.
So it may have been her husband.
No.
What?
No. It wasn't her husband, but she was there out in the open because of...
So first of all, some actually assume... So as I mentioned before, the Medrash says that Barak was her husband. So some point out that's why pasuk, you see in the next pasuk, she summoned Barak, you see he wasn't around. So that's why she had this issue. If he was in the city, so then she wouldn't have this issue. But remember, she used to send him to Shiloh to bring the wick. She didn't have Baal Abayir, she didn't have her husband in the city. So that's why she even had to deal with this issue in the first place. She had to summon him back when she needed to speak to him. So the Mefarshim give an interesting answer, and they say that the reason why, even with two men in front of her, she was concerned about Yichud, it was her own concern. Because a judge has to view all the people in front of her like Rishayim. That's what the Gemara says. So she has to assume that they're both guilty. They're both Rishayim. And therefore, she has to assume they're Rishayim. And when you have two men, even 10 men, if they're all, the Gemara says, if they're Rishayim, if they're Prutzim, if they're not proper people, then even with 10 men there, one woman and 10 men is still a problem with Yichud. So therefore, even with 2 men, she was concerned with Yichud. Now, other Mepharshim aren't happy with this because that's not what the Gemara means. It doesn't mean to view them as Prutzim. It means just to view them in terms of, you know, monetary matters as Rishayim, as improper, but not necessarily to view them as you know, people who would engage in that type of behavior in front of each other.
Or as having equal merit.
Right.
Well, that's what I was getting at. About viewing them as Rishayim, so this is an exception to that consequence.
A judge can't be done with kapsulot. Right, no, a judge absolutely, no, a judge cannot be done with kapsulot.
Well, no, but isn't there a kazaka that all Jews are...
Yeah, but I guess when you have two people in front of you and one is saying that he did something wrong and the other one saying that he did something wrong, so you can't assume that they're both right. One of them is wrong, and you have to view them equally... In an equal light, assume that, you know, they both might be the one who did something wrong, who's lying or whatever it might be, or is mistaken. I think that's what it means. Now, so these Mepharshim are taking it like a step further and trying to explain why she had concern of Yichud. Rashi, really quoting Targum Yonasan, has a whole different approach to this pasuk, and he says, based on Targum Yonasan, you read this pasuk, it's not at all what it seems to be saying. These are the places where she held property. These are all the, just listing off all of her her property and her resources and her business ventures that, it says Rashi, it teaches us she was an Isha Ashira, she was very wealthy, and in all these places she had Parnassa coming from them. She had business. So, and she lived, says Rashi, in her city, which was called Ataros. She lived in Ataros, that's where she was. But she sat under all these things that, you know, those were her livelihood. So for example, so she was under Tomer Devorah. She lived off of Tomer Devorah, off of her palm business, her date business, which was based in Yericho. And she also lived with Yoshevitz being her Rama. She had business in Rama. In Rama she had Kramim. She had the vineyards. And she had olives in Beis El, in the valley there, which is a place that grows olives. And then she had other ventures in Har Ephraim. She had some white dirt. I'm not sure exactly what that business was for, but
white dirt?
That's what Afar. What? Salt or clay?
Clay.
I think I saw it explained. I just don't remember what it was used for. Somebody said it, but basically she had all these different resources. That's what it's saying, and the pasuk is just pointing out that. That she was a wealthy woman. Now, what?
Is it in general that Joseph was supposed to be judges are supposed to be wealthy, so they're not be influenced
very good.
By bribes?
Very good. So there's a Gemara. There's really two Gemaras. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, says my dechsev melech the mishpat yamid aret. The ish trumos yahar sena. What does it mean that a melech b'mishpat, a king in judgment, will uphold the land, and a ish trumos, a man who takes donations, takes trumos, will destroy it? Someone who's a melech in judgment will uphold the land, and a ish trumos, a man who takes donations, will destroy it. So it says, the Gemara says, Im dayang domela mela, she'eno tzarech l'kum, if a judge acts like a king and doesn't need anything, or if he's like a king and has no needs, so then yamid aris, that would hold up the land. But if he's like a Kohen who needs the people's donations, he goes into the threshing floor to ask people for to give them their truma. So then Yaharsena, that will destroy the land. So a judge has to be like a king, not needing anything, and not like someone who needs to go around collecting. So what does it mean? So it's interesting. There's two different Gemara's brought in two different mesechtos, and Rashi in each mesechta gives a different pshat. So Rashi in Ksubos says, like you, what does it mean she'engel tzarech klum? He doesn't need anything. Says Rashi shehu asher vein tzarech l'tzanis. He's wealthy. He doesn't need flattery. Doesn't need bribes. If the judge is wealthy, holds him or herself above, and doesn't need anything, so then that will hold up the land. That's a good thing. And we see from this pasuk the way Rashi and Targum Yomasan are approaching it, that Devorah had that quality. She's very wealthy, and therefore she was able to be a good judge. Rashi in Sanhedrin says differently. What does it mean in a dayan, if he's domel lemelech, that a dayan should be like a king? It means shebaki b'tziv dinim umalei chachma kemelech zeshu asher. She should be rich in terms of her knowledge, or he. The judge has to be rich in his knowledge, and not need to go and ask other people for, you know, what to do. But if he's mechazer al agranos, but if he needs them to go and collect, to ask other basins for what the halacha is, and then that's not really the best type of dayan. You want your dayanim to be experts. So certainly Devorah had this quality as well, because right, she was in the via, she was in touch with Hashem. So it would seem that and we see that the people went to her as a good judge. So she seemed to have this quality as well. So really, she was probably Yotze both interpretations of Rashi in terms of having the proper qualities to be a judge. And the third shot in Tomer Devorah is really probably the most simplest, the most shot approach, which is the Radak, and he says it as, you know, the way he says it is Derech HaPshat. You want to know just Pashat Shat, is that her house was under a date tree. I don't know why that would be significant, and that's a question that you have to deal with, and that's maybe why we have the deeper Pshat, the Drush, but the Radak says very simply, Derech HaPshat, Sahaya Rabbi Yisachas Tomer Echad. She had her house was under
the date tree. Under
I mean, so why do I need to know about that? It didn't tell me what color the carpet at her, you know,
brown.
The rug at her front door was.
Brown dirt.
So, that's just the Pashup shot. Continuing on. And she sent and she called to Baruch ben Avinoam Kedesh Naphtali, from this place, Kedesh Naphtali. Batomer Elov, and she said to him, Halo, Tziva Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Behold, Hashem, the God of Israel, has commanded. What has he commanded? Seemingly, he's commanded, Lechu Mashachta Behar Tavor. Go and pull the people together at Har Tavor, and take with you 10,000 men, from the Bnei Naphtali and the Bnei Zebulun, the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun, bring them in, and what should you do? Let's read on the next passage. And I will pull to you into the valley of Kishon, Sisra, the Sartzva Yavin, Sisra, the, or the river of Kishon, Sisra, Sartzva Yavin, Sisra, the general of Yavin, who was the king of Canaan, Vesrichbo and his chariot, Vesamono and his great group, Unisatiu Biadecha, and I will place him in your hand. So Devorah tells Baruch, go to go to Har Tavor and bring with you the 10,000 men, and there Hashem will basically hand you Sisera, and his army will place them in your hand, and you will defeat them.
That did you originally translate this?
What? Which one? Nesatiyu v'yadecha?
Yeah.
And he'll give them into your hand.
Hashem.
Yes. So, just going back to Pasuk Vav, Harot Tziva Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Hashem has commanded. And then the Pasuk seems to say what Hashem has commanded, right? That you should go and gather at Har Tavor. But Rashi tells us something interesting. What Harot Tziva, what has he commanded? So Rashi says, B'yad Moshe, Harot Tziva, Hashem has commanded to Moshe, what? Yacharim Tachrimim, that you should utterly destroy them. That's the mechilta, that's the metric. So what was she referring to? Al-Siva Hashem? She was referring to what Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu, that you have to destroy the Canaanite nations completely.
They were doing it.
Right, they had not been doing that. And now she says, this is the tivoy, this is the command, go and do that. The Malbim goes with a more pashut shot, a more simple approach, which is, Alotiva Hashem, Hashem is commanding, and then she goes on and tells him what Hashem has commanded. Hashem has commanded that you go and you gather the people, and you bring them to Har Tavor, and there he's going to give you Sisera into your hand.
Meaning this had already been said by Hashem?
Hashem had told Tavor, right, the Navi doesn't have, like in the Torah we often have, and Hashem said to say, and then, you know, you see him say that. Now that, we talked about last week, that may be because of the type of nevuah that Nevi'im had, as opposed to the nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu, which we discussed last week, a machlokas between the Malbim and the Abarbanel, as to whether the words of the Navi, the words that they speak and the words that they write, whether those words are the exact words that Hashem gave, or whether they Hashem, you know, gave them a message and then they just put it into their own words in how they delivered it and how they spoke it out. That's how the Abarbanel holds. Yaakov Kamenetsky also writes that. And the Malbim argues very hard against that and says, no, every word of the Navi, every word that they spoke and every word that they wrote down was specifically dictated from Hashem. Then you have to just get into the discussion of how that differentiates, you know, from Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah, but that's the Malbim's approach. Okay, so I think we're going to hold it here, and next week we'll continue to discuss this topic.
I didn't mean any insults here. Sorry.
No insults.